Penguin Random House Audio presents On Great Fields, The Life and Unlikely Heroism of Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain. This is the author, Ronald C. White. As Ever for Cynthia Conger White. In great deeds something abides. On great fields something stays. Forms change and pass. Bodies disappear, but spirits linger to consecrate ground for the vision place of souls. Generations that know us not and that we know not of, heart drawn to see where and by whom great things were suffered and done for them, shall come to this deathless field to ponder and dream. Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain, speech at dedication of main monuments at Little Round Top, October 1889. Prologue. A Courageous and Controversial Leader. It's July 1, 1863. The men of the 20th Maine Regiment have just entered Pennsylvania. Over the course of a long, hot, and humid day, women and children step out of their modest homes to cheer on the Union soldiers as they march and to offer them water and milk. The 20th Maine finally stops just after midnight, 4 miles southeast of the market town of Gettysburg. They've walked nearly 30 miles since waking up that morning. Bedding down for the night, they hear the recurring boom of cannon. The soldiers don't know what they might face on July 2nd, but they know their colonel. He has earned their trust. The colonel of the 20th Maine was 34-year-old Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain, husband of Frances Caroline Adams, known as Fanny, the love of his life, and father of 6-year-old Grace and 4-year-old Willie's. Chamberlain stood 5 feet 10½ inches tall, but with a ramrod straight posture that made him appear closer to 6 feet. A handsome man with a lean, strong build, sandy-colored hair, and a ferocious mustache, Chamberlain's sparkling blue eyes conveyed his interest and affection for the volunteer soldiers he led. Yet he was an unlikely military leader. Mild-mannered, soft-spoken, amiable, good-humored, Chamberlain worked as a professor at small Bowdoin College in far-off Brunswick, Maine, before enlisting. He was a man of intellectual curiosity and deep Christian faith, fluent in 9 languages, who interspersed his lectures with allusions to Athens and Rome and quotations from Dante and Goethe. No one would have predicted that this learned professor from a quiet northern town would become a confident Union officer prepared to lead his men in the epic Battle of Gettysburg. Chamberlain prized duty as a central ethical imperative. He was an ardent believer in the Union. Born only 50 years after the nation's founding, for him the idea of the Union was not simply a political reality, but a spiritual and transcendent truth. He did not initially rush to enlist in the Union Army in the spring of 1861, but in the months that followed, as he watched his Bowdoin students join up, with some ending up captured or killed, duty called him to offer his service. Chamberlain was idealistic, ambitious, high-spirited, loyal, and courageous. He could also be impetuous and stubborn. At Gettysburg, he would need to draw upon every one of his qualities. He and the men of the 20th Maine would be tested at a place called Little Round Top, defending the far left of the Union line. In a fierce battle, Maine lumbermen, farmers, and small shopkeepers battled Alabamians, led by William Oates, also a courageous colonel. As the combat, fought with bayonets and pistols and hand-to-hand, surged back and forth, the 20th Maine volunteers began to run out of ammunition. With the outcome of the deadly struggle in doubt, Chamberlain called out, "Bayonet!" After a breathless silence, as if a spark had lit a fire, First, a few men on the left wing sprang forward. Then a few more men on the right wing leaped into the fray. Now, shouting, the main soldiers plunged down the tree-lined, boulder-strewn slope, surprising the stunned Confederate troops who either surrendered or ran in defeat. Outnumbered and out of ammunition, Chamberlain had led the 20th Maine to victory. The victory at Little Round Top on July 2, 1863, would change his life forever. 1 year after Gettysburg, at Petersburg, Virginia, Chamberlain suffered such a grievous wound that physicians told him he would die. General Ulysses S. Grant promoted him on the spot so that his family would be honored by his well-deserved recognition. Accepting this verdict, Chamberlain wrote his wife Fanny a remarkable letter about his faith and his love for her. He did not, in fact, die, but would live in constant pain from his war wounds and their infections for the remaining years of his life. Chamberlain's heroic feats were largely forgotten in the passage of time, but they received an unexpected national rebirth in 1974 when he was featured as a main character in Michael Shara's Pulitzer Prize-winning historical novel, The Killer Angels. Then in 1990, celebrated filmmaker Ken Burns featured Chamberlain in the now classic PBS television documentary, The Civil War. And in 1993, actor Jeff Daniels portrayed Chamberlain in the popular Civil War movie Gettysburg, based on Shara's novel. That literary, television, and cinema trifecta generated for Chamberlain a huge following among Civil War aficionados and beyond. By the mid-1990s, Little Round Top had become the most visited place at Gettysburg, thanks in significant part to Chamberlain's newfound fame. I learned early on in my research that writing a biography of Chamberlain would be a prickly task. Chamberlain has legions of admirers, but also, more recently, critics, who are convinced he was culpable for embellishing, if not fabricating, his role in the Civil War. I ultimately disagree with this theory, but in the 1990s, reports circulated that under their official uniforms, National Park Service staff at Gettysburg wore T-shirts, bearing the cutting question, "Joshua who?" Even with the renewed interest in Chamberlain, the focus on his biography has remained largely on the Civil War years. There is so much more to his life. After the war, he would go on to occupy more varied positions than any Civil War veteran. Professor, governor, college president, popular lecturer, and author. I have come to believe it is not simply his heroism in the Civil War, but the diverse vocations he held that make his story so compelling. In living with Chamberlain daily, I confronted a puzzle of many pieces. How to reconcile the bookworm college and seminary student with a risk-taking Civil War soldier? How to understand the proud beneficiary of a classical education in contrast with a young professor willing to challenge both the curriculum and the teaching methods of his revered college? How to balance the soldier who believed his military accomplishments made him deserving of promotion with a man steeped in an ethical framework that taught him never to push for advancement? How to appreciate a patriot who believed fervently in the Union, a powerful concept that can be hard for people to appreciate today, in concert with his magnanimity toward soldiers who fought for the Confederacy? To meet Chamberlain is to encounter an American of enormous gifts, but also great insecurities. His self-doubt began with an intense period of youthful stuttering, appeared frequently in his letters while courting Fanny, and surfaced in diverse ways as he served as soldier, governor, and then president of Bowdoin College. A central piece of the puzzle is Chamberlain's wife Fanny and their marriage. Bright, talented, and artistic, with a lifelong struggle with depression, Fanny was a woman who exhibited both vast strength and vulnerability. The inner workings of her marriage to Lawrence have long defied full comprehension, but I became convinced that a careful re-
Sample complete. Ready to continue?